Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, the show's about to begin, but before we get started, here are some words from our newest sponsors.
If you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, I've got news for you. Dollar Shave Club has a lot of stuff to help you out.
You guys, Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. It's not just about razors, you guys. Dollar Shave Club, yes, that Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that'll leave your little tushy feeling tingly and clean.
I'm a big fan of their Amber Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. Never smelled anything like it. Good luck finding a product that great at the store.
All of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with the top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference. Plus, shipping is free with your membership.
And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essential Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, their amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the 6-Blade Executive. Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/junkie. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie. Do it, you filthy animals.
This is your captain speaking. We are making our descent into Las Vegas McCarran Airport. On behalf of our crew, we'd like to thank you for flying MMA Junkie Airlines. Now please fasten your seatbelts and put your tray tables in your upright position because the descent is going to be a little bit bumpy.
All right, Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. All night long, we rollin'! Yes!
The MMA Junkie Radio revolution is upon us.
Can you dig it?
There's no escape.
No escape.
Through the vast frontier of cyberspace and through a sea of stars in outer space.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We've solidified our combat communication stranglehold.
We are controlling transmission.
With the use of MMA Junkie Radio and Sirius XM satellite radio technology.
MMA Junkie Radio, commence transmission.
Live from MMA Junkie Radio HQ in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Here are your hosts, Gorgeous George and Goz.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz, our East co-host. To my left, the fight analyst, Dan Tom. Back East, handling the producing duties, Danny Otto. What's up, guys?
Good morning. Much.
Morning.
It's afternoon for you, Danny.
It is, but I was being polite.
Oh, okay. Huh?
I like that shirt.
This one?
Yeah.
Modern Day?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Not many people like Modern Day. The most successful sports program in all of high school athletics across the nation. It just rubs people the wrong way. So Bishop Gorman is going to get a taste of that. They got smacked around last year. They ended their five-year winning streak, and Modern Day is coming to Bishop Gorman to show them that it wasn't hometown cooking or anything like that. It's just, we're a powerhouse. That's the way we handle business. But thank you, guys.
You should bet Dana White.
I can try.
He's very passionate about that.
He is.
So I would imagine
it can't
if you
be
just
money,
got
though,
close to him.
Because there's nothing I can do to hurt him there.
Yeah.
So what would I bet him?
You lose, you got to host a show on Monday.
You win.
I'll wear a Gorman shirt to every UFC event this year or something.
That's interesting. He might take it up. He might take up something like that.
Well, you got to, because if you're not, you're a chicken. You don't want to be a chicken, right?
Right.
Goes is the worst person to do that with.
I would do the Gales. I think that's what they're called, the Big G. Or Gorman, I guess. Gorman Gales. I have one from. It doesn't specify wrestling, right? Or does it
say
Gorman
wrestling?
I think
it does say wrestling.
Oh, okay. I guess I'd wear that. I have that. I did it to support Ricky.
Ricky Tan did.
And if they lose, then yeah, all he's got to do is sport it once, because the one time he sports it, he has so much popularity and pull.
Hmm.
And carry so much weight on social media, I think we'd be good. And what would I have to wear it for?
No. If you win, he's got to host a show on Monday.
Oh, with us?
Yeah. But if he wins,
what do I wear?
You got to wear that shirt to every UFC this year that you cover. Vegas,
that seems like a deal.
That's pretty reasonable, right. I think.
Except I would insist that he wear the shirt while he hosts the show. Do like a soccer trade.
That's tough. I don't know. If I'm him, that position, I would say, hey, bitch, pick one or the other. But then again, like, if you're just confident in your team, what do you give a shit?
Because I don't
think if you honestly think your team's going to win,
there you go.
Just do it.
Exactly. All right, here's some news from this past weekend. We have two guests coming up in about 45 minutes, pretty much back-to-back. One will end the first hour from Combate Americas. They're one of their executives, Mike Aframowitz, and then Gerald Harris, who not only stepped in late notice for Bellator at Bellator 198 to fight Rafael Lovato Jr., came out on the losing end, former UFC vet, by the way, former college wrestler at Cleveland State with Stephen Miocic, part-time comedian, gym owner. He's back. He signed a contract, so it seems like he's back in MMA. He'll be fighting with Bellator for the next X amount of fights. So those are our two guests. But I want to spend some time recapping the weekend, man. Stuff went down. Dislocated elbow joints. You guys saw that one?
Yeah.
Alexander Melianenko's back. He got himself a finish out there in Russia.
Technically Gabriel Gonzaga, right?
Gabriel Gonzaga, yeah. Former UFC title contender. He fought Randy Couture for the title one time. And he was a longtime UFC vet. And then we also had Kyoji Horiguchi, who fought Ian McCall. And boy, that Ian McCall's got to have the worst luck.
Of all time.
Because out of all these fights that were going to happen in the UFC, where there was just last-minute mishap. Well, there was either injury pullouts one way or the other, and then last-minute as well. A whole list.
The draw.
Mm-hmm. A whole list of things that have just snake-bit the poor guy. So him and Kyoji Horiguchi, former UFC flyweight contender, they elected to fight at bantamweight at Ryzen FF10. And they were in the main event. The fight lasted 9 seconds.
Can we just say it was a good punch as well?
It was a great punch. I agree. It was a great punch.
But when you grab his track record, he's taken a lot of good punches in a lot of fights. It's not like you can even point back to other fights where you go, man, he always gets hit early on in a fight. Like, it was just shitty luck.
It was.
But it was a great punch.
It was a great punch. He falls to the floor. But I've watched it about 50 times, because it's only 9 seconds long. And I felt the referee got there too early.
Perhaps.
The referee beat Horiguchi to the follow-up punches.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, because I know a lot of people go, he was trying to get a single on the ref. Yeah, because the ref got there so quick, the single was actually for Horiguchi. You saw a few weeks ago with Kevin Lee, he was pretty rocked as well on his feet. And, you know, had he fallen, I think he would have had the same. It would have been like a similar effect, except he was able to do a chicken dance, you know, and stay on his feet. But yeah, they were both rocked. I think he would have grabbed a single. And look, Horiguchi may have been able to hammer fist, and maybe it's a 15 second stoppage, or maybe they go towards the end of the first round and he finishes them anyway, or maybe a decision. I don't know. But I felt like McCall I just feel like he...
short end of the stick?
Yeah, he was robbed the opportunity to continue fighting. And
sure?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Robbed?
Not robbed of a decision or anything like that. Just, okay, let me pick another word. I think he...
burglarized?
No. I think Ian McCall should have got more time, more ample time, to at least try and recover and see if there's some follow-ups. Or if he's able to secure a single, get his wits about him, maybe coast to the end of the first round, come out, fight in the second, or maybe make a comeback in that first round. I don't know. I've seen a lot of fights, and I just felt like it was too soon for me. And I watched it many times because it was so quick to just go back and hit replay. And I watched the different angles that were out there. And for one, there wasn't the instant where he just gets flattened and the arms are out. There was awareness. He does kind of fall like, you know, like someone does when they get rocked. But there was that awareness of at least knowing, hey, I'm in trouble. I got, you know, I got to grab a hold of this guy. It's just that that guy was the ref at that point. But there also didn't seem to be any clear-cut angle to the referee being able to see if his eyes rolled back or he was just gone. I just thought it was quick. Now, I'm not going to suggest home cooking or anything like that or, the ref wanted the Japanese guys to win. No, I just think he just panicked and pulled the trigger a little bit too quick for me. What'd you think?
I think if I were the judge and you were making that case on
ref
one side.
Or judge? Judge. Okay, I got you.
And then somebody else made the other one. I would probably say, you both make valid points, but
we
call
can't change
is
the result.
The call yeah. night of.
Yeah.
And I would say I probably wouldn't scold the ref when we get to the back.
Right.
But I'm more of that old school guy that would say they both signed a fight. They knew the dangers. Maybe you could have let it go a little bit more just to see what the next step would have been. But I'm okay with what you did.
How about you, Dan?
Yeah, this was one of the few fights I did see over the weekend because, like you said, it was only 9 seconds. How could you not? But yeah, I don't – I feel like there's an argument that it could have went for longer, but I'll pull up, and I don't think it was a robbery of any sort in the stoppage because – McCall, even when guys protest, they'll protest when they clearly go out. They'll protest when it's close. They'll protest just to protest because they're programmed to fight. And I don't blame a fighter for that, but we've seen that, right? We didn't really see that from McCall. It was more just what I saw, the body language was more coming to a realization of what happened. Now, you don't have to go completely out to come to that realization, woke up and go, oh, no, I got knocked out, and they freak out. They see the replay. We've seen that. But that can happen when a guy is still in fight mode. You know, he's still kind of swimming in for a single leg, which looked like McCall might have started to do if the ref let it go. And I'll also pull up from what Ghost said as far as a lucky punch, because that punch, I'm a little biased, it came from an orthodox stance, but that is my favorite punch ever, especially whenever you're facing opposite stance, because McCall was taking a southpaw stance when he was in combination, and as a southpaw going against orthodox, I love getting an orthodox guy to commit to his cross. And the check hook runs right, their momentum when they're throwing the cross, if you throw a check hook when you're in an open stance matchup, their momentum from throwing the cross, their hardest punch, brings them right into the momentum of a check hook. That's why those checking shots, they don't take a lot to.
Like Josh Emmett on Ricardo?
Yeah, Eve Edwards on Jeremy Stevens. And Jeremy Stevens is a tough guy to knock out. But one of the few times we saw Jeremy Stevens knocked out, what happened? He was committing on a cross as Eve Edwards stepped into that little check hook, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just—it didn't seem like the most hardest shot, but that's when the guys go out.
Okay.
So that was, and that's what Kyoji Horiguchi hit. And Horiguchi is a heavy-handed dude. He was knocking out bantamweights in the UFC.
You thought it was a lucky punch?
No. I just said it's bad luck for you.
Bad luck.
McCall.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I thought the punch.
And
you
let
know,
me ask you this: you didn't see a little bit from McCall, kind of like pushing the ref away, almost like there was immediate disappointment. It could be he was disappointed in himself, the result, or the stoppage.
Exactly, yeah, it could have been that too. Yeah,
right,
100%.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the little of that I know of anything else that may have gone down. I saw a little bit of McCall at the press fight, post-fight press conference, and I saw his post, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I thought, you know. Like, nothing's going to change the result, and Goz is right. If they adjudicated it and said, look, let's talk to the referee, let's do this, no one's going to overturn anything. I'm not asking to overturn anything. I just felt like that was, like, the on the really quick side of pulling the trigger to stop it.
Could have been handled differently, maybe.
Yeah.
But who knows? Like you said, maybe it doesn't stop it, and it's even worse, right, whatever comes out of it. Maybe, but the problem is we wouldn't know. And I think, I think what you're saying is correct. And he probably didn't know the extent. He just knew it was bad, right?
So. Yeah.
I will say, though, too, I agree. It goes like McCall definitely, somebody who sympathizes with bad luck. That dude definitely had bad luck. I guess what I was just trying to say is that I thought it was a bad matchup going in. I was kind of, I wasn't sure if that was the best matchup. But yeah.
Also, Alexander Emelianenko defeated Gabriel Gonzaga. The finish is impressive, but it was, Alex, I remember always boasting how much he felt like he had more of a traditional boxer type of punch. And towards the end, he was just boom, boom, power. And it looked like it was from all the muscle that he's added. It was from ring rust, and he's probably just lost a little bit of his technique. But he has so much power, and he was going for it at the end, and Gonzaga was hurt. He got himself a clean finish, and that's all there is to that, honestly. Like, that's not like some big shaking news or anything mm-hmm. that's going to affect the rankings. It's just that it's kind of been slow these last few weeks. And there was some different things that caught my eye.
It was like 12 or so unanswered punches. Like, who isn't going to get knocked out with a heavyweight throwing, teeing off on you like that? Like, Gabriel, you could tell the first couple punches may have stung him, but you weren't too sure. I think if Gabriel maybe would have just fired something back, maybe he could have kept Alexander at bay at least a little bit. But he just basically said, hey, man, give me 12 shots. I'll see what I can do with them. You can't do that when you're a heavyweight. Just, you're going to go down.
Mm-hmm. Dana White Contender Series. We heard a little bit about that. It returns on June 12th. They already have two cards that are set. If you go to SureDog or maybe Tapology, you'll see. One thing that I noticed, though, was there's only four fights per card. Did you guys catch that?
I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before it's now, been five, it
could
right?
be. Yeah, last year was five. But, and it could be that they still add one more to each. But I only saw four. Now, they pulled it off last year where all five fights were getting done in 2 hours because there's really not much, you know, TV production per se. It's just like, here are the fights, these two in, these two out, another two in, another two out. And, you know, there's just really not much pause in between. So, do you care or...
Well, I'm trying to think if last year there were ever any nights that we just felt like, wow, this is dragging on.
I don't think we did, right?
Didn't we feel like if anything, we got out early a couple times?
Right.
So it was right I guess on I time. Would miss yeah. it a little bit, that extra fight.
Mm-hmm.
For the fighters, yeah, it's probably fight. Better because you have more of a chance of being that guy that gets called. But then that's always not guaranteed either.
But if you were the guy that didn't get called, I mean, like, there's going to be 8 shows, I believe. So that's... 8 fights, 16 fighters that also didn't get a chance to impress the judge. But you're right, or the judges, which are the two matchmakers and the president. But you're right, those 4 matchups, meaning those 8 fighters, now have less competition because mm-hmm. there's one less fight.
How bad is it that when you propose that question, the first thing I thought of, well, if they go one less fight, how would that affect the schedule of the food trucks, which they seem to have left about 2 fights early before the cards came out at a 5-fight card. So does that mean they leave after the 2nd fight as opposed to the 3rd? Do I wait till the intermission and am I late like last time goes? Or do I get my hot dog or burger early? Is it bad that that's where my head went?
Think of that. You wouldn't be human if you didn't think
right.
of that.
That's where my head went. What was it called? Do you remember?
Fugu Burger.
Fuku.
I still haven't tried
it. I had a couple of them, and it was delicious, all right? And I have the answer to that. Okay. They leave at 7. And since most of the events were ending either just at 7 okay. or before 7, right. you kind of had to hustle.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody. Couldn't sit there and do handshakes and hugs and all that. So your strategy is either got to be to get there early, uh-huh. take your time, and then not worry about it, or hope they end early, which they probably did of the 8 times, 4 times. And then of the times they ended at 7, the guy was still there. It's not like he had this big old close sign, I'm out of here, peeled out at 7. So I don't think it's too big of a concern. But he makes a delicious burger, in my opinion.
You know that when you order there, you have to give them a nickname. You can't use your real name.
Really?
And I didn't know that the first time. So the first time when I went, I think like the first couple people, like I think the guy said something like Brutus or something like that. And then somebody from the UFC that I know is not a Brutus walked up. Mm-hmm. But then there was one that was almost kind of offensive. And I think it might have been you. That you just used a dumb name, and I thought he was insulting you. I was like, dude, this guy's got some balls. Like, these burgers must be good. And I didn't realize that because I didn't order one that week.
But I went with High Top. I know one.
High Top?
Yeah.
Wait, is that the guy from Colors or is that Richie Valens?
No, that's the guy from Colors.
Colors?
Yeah. So,
Colors.
I think the other one was 7.
Pints. Oh, Bear was one of them. Bear.
Bear?
Yeah, and it was somebody that kind of looked like a bear, so I was like, dude, this guy's ballsy.
Oh, no.
Bear, come get your burger.
I tried to give him different ones, but I just went with 7 on one from Seinfeld.
7.
I went with High Top, Salami.
Salami.
I can't remember the other ones. Anyway, the Dana White Contender Series is back. It sucks that it took a whole year to come back because I thought this was one of those things they could do, like Tough, where they just Tough is twice a year, and this is way more fights. But I've always felt like there's an abundance of fighters out there. Like, these are the guys that got in last year. All right, I counted them, and it was basically two per fight, the average. Charles Byrd, Alan Crowder, Brandon Davis, Grant Dawson, Matt Frivola, Kurt Hollibaugh, Benito Lopez, Julian Marquez, Lauren Mueller, Jeff Neal,
Mueller.
Sean O'Malley, Alex Perez, Carl Roberson, Mueller. Mike Rodriguez, and Boston Salmon, and Joby Sanchez. That's a nice haul, right?
Mueller.
Yeah.
If you went out, if you were a fishing boat and you casted the net and that's what you pulled in, I think you'd go, hey, all right, we got some talent here. And some of them have worked out. Some of them I'm excited about.
Compare those names.
Some I know have already gotten a loss, but go ahead.
Let's say compare those names now to the last two seasons of Tough. And how many tangible names versus tangible names.
Let's pull it up. That's a good point to bring up, and then let's see here.
Career ceilings versus career ceilings. Nice way to put it.
Where would you rather, if you're a fighter and you had a way into the UFC, would you rather try and go through Tough, or would you rather try and go through Dana White's Contender Series?
Definitely.
If you win Tough, you get a pretty good contract, right?
Yeah.
They say.
You're on TV.
That whole six-figure thing's a little played out.
Well, you have to lose, right?
I think you do get good publicity out of it, and maybe the contract's improved. And now they have, I think, the $25,000 bonus mm-hmm. and a five per five bonus.
And you're on TV.
You're on TV. So, yeah, I would think that coming out of that, you're probably better off than coming out of one of these. With the exception of, like, O'Malley, he maximized it because he's getting high with Snoop. And I don't know if he was isolated on a week where it was just him or what happened. But, you know, look at where he's at. You see what I'm saying? I would say he's ahead of a couple of the more recent champions, with the exception of ones that automatically crown champions.
On Tough, though, if you win, you're in. You're the guy. On Dana White, you can win and not be in.
Right.
So there's that, too. Right?
But you also didn't have to go in the house for 6 weeks. You may have been able to fight elsewhere. You can also come back like Joby Sanchez did.
Mm-hmm.
Your wins count. Can you imagine going on Dana White and just getting knocked out? It does, like, I don't know. That's a pretty grueling show. And, I don't know. I mean, like, this is the undefeated season. It's not going to count against the record, but if you got in there and got iced, that kind of sucks. It's a concussion. It's a loss you probably didn't want to take. And you just, that's it. You know, you're stuck in the house for another 5 weeks, 4 weeks, depending on when your fight took place, when you could already be home, done sulking, building yourself up for the next fight. I don't know. There's probably positive and negatives for both. Here's 26. Barb Honchak, Lauren Murphy, Deanna Bennett, Melinda Fabian, Christina Marks, Ariel Black, Sajara Eubanks, Shayna Dobson, Roxanne Modafferi, Maya Stevenson, Montana Stewart, Emily Whitmire, Rachel Ostovich Burdon probably, Kareen Gevorgian, Nico Montano, and Jillian Robertson. So that seemed to be a pretty good haul, because I've seen a lot of those names. For sure I've seen Roxanne, Maya, Emily's still in the UFC, Rachel for sure is in the UFC, Nico Montano, and then the other side, Honchak's got a fight, Lauren Murphy's got a fight. Can't remember what happened to Deanna Bennett. Did I just see her at Invicta or UFC?
Staying power, though, right? Is what we're
Yeah, we just saw her at Invicta recently. And then I don't know if anything's announced, but I'm pretty sure Emily's got something booked.
Okay. How do you know, Dan Tom?
Huh?
How do you know, Dan Tom?
I just, following on the old social media. You can tell when fighters are getting ready for stuff.
Sajara Eubanks. What happened to her? Has she fought since the show?
I think so.
Did she? Aspen Ladd at Invicta in January of 2017, so she hasn't fought.
I don't even remember her being booked or having to pull out of injury either.
She went undefeated, and let me see. The air date was November. They probably fought sometime in August. So we're already getting close to May, almost a year off. I know she had that vicious weight cut, but she was going to fight, obviously. How silly. She was going to fight, and then what's her face stepped in, Roxanne Modafferi. But she hasn't done anything since then.
That was December 1st, right? That
yeah. Card?
We were in Virginia for that one.
Were we?
Confirmed upcoming. Oh, she had a canceled bout. That was why canceled against Nicole Montano and then confirmed against Lauren Murphy. At the Utica card, Rivera Moraes. I think that's in Utica, right? Fight night 131.
So she is fighting.
Yep.
Okay. It's either Lauren in Murphy. Utica, Schenectady.
Schenectady, New York.
The Poconos.
What in the world is all that about, guys?
I don't know. Place they got the, weird names.
Place Beyond the Pines is a bunch of those weird New York names. Poughkeepsie. I would say that the only argument to enter tough now goes is if you're a fighter that you're looking more on the marketing side and you're looking to transition more outside of fighting. I think if you're a fighter's fighter and you really think you're going to win, I think not just the Dana White Contender Series. I mean, in the last year, I think we've heard an influx of guys in interviews saying they would rather have waited. We had a chance to get on tough, but we knew they were interested, so instead I decided to stay ready and take the short-notice bout.
Yeah.
Because we're hearing guys that would rather take the short-notice bout, which sounded crazy, but now is a kind of a accepted way into the UFC, you know, for people in the know. That's become such a common thing that guys are actually, I'm hearing in interviews, saying they would rather take that than tough. So that tells me, if presented the question, I think a lot of these fighters would take the Contender Series. Because, again, Contender Series, we've seen guys, the guy who fought Alan Belcher's striking coach, the guy,
Sean Belcher's striking coach?
Yeah, he was mentioning that name, that 145 or the real slick guy. But he fought a guy, and the guy he fought in a loss ended up getting a shot in the UFC off a loss from Dana White Contender Series, where you can win it, come from a great camp, be a great guy like Eddie Gordon, for example, and be washed out still within three or four fights. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you kind of look at these examples, and it's just like, I'll go in a contender's fight, put on a good fight, maybe get signed, you know, and even if I win or lose, I'm on the radar and I can get in the UFC still.
Here's what happened at Tough 25, by the way. James Krause, he's in the UFC, but he was already in the UFC, so we can't count him. Jesse Taylor, suspended. Ramzi Nijem, I saw his name on PFL. Diego Lima, I think I saw him take a fight with the UFC. He may still be there.
He just lost to Okami.
Mm-hmm. He did?
He's probably going to be done, right? After that, yeah.
Okay, Joe Stevenson, didn't hear much from him. Galicchio, what happened to Galicchio? He's just got those little candy machines and what else? Anything?
I don't know. Dude's got key wins. I don't know what's coming up.
Gilbert Smith, Justin Edwards, Julian Lane, Hader Hassan, Mehdi Baghdad, Seth Baczynski. Like that season was only for who makes it back and the rest of you see it. Like that was it, man. It was like a one and done.
So we probably got to wait about another year, right, to figure this question out.
I think so. I'm a huge, huge Dana White Contender Series fan, though. Dana
That's
White
true.
Tuesday Night Contender Series.
But if you were to put a gun to my head and right now and say the ceilings on these last two seasons are tough for the ceilings on the first Dana White Contender Series, I would probably ever so slightly edge 55% to 45% Dana White Contender Series. And I know.
So would I.
And I'm even friends with and know the lesser known females on the other side of that equation. So it's not that I'm stereotyping or unfairly judging. Like, if anything, more of my biases are on the other side, you know, from the vets to the young females. Like,
O'Malley's proving it.
You know? But yeah, you know.
And he's hurt. And he's still kind of popular. Like, if he pops up, people are reading. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start with some calls. 866-522-2846. It's MMA Junkie Radio on SiriusXM, Rush 93.
Do what they say. Your life will be a lot better. Here are Gorgeous and Goes.
Where'd it go? This makes no sense.
Just call Roundtable and tell them you had the coupon, but...
Ah, here we go. Start your day with SiriusXM. Enable the SiriusXM skill on your Amazon device. Then tell Alexa to set an alarm for your favorite channel. You'll wake up to the sounds of SiriusXM. With SiriusXM and Alexa, you can get the latest sports news each morning without picking up your phone or turning on the TV. Let's take some calls. 866-522-2846. Start off with Marco in Waco, Texas. What's up, Marco?
Marco from Waco. ¿Qué pasa, dudes?
What's up?
¿Qué pasa? Hey, Marco, quick question for you. This was a question in Facebook in the combat chat. Are you more excited about UFC 224 or Bellator 199. Now, by that I also mean, I think the question that I want to ask you is, you got to remember, one's a pay-per-view and the other one isn't. So what's your level of excitement then? Because I think we can all agree that the UFC's got a little bit of a deeper roster running on Saturday, although Bellator's got some, you know, some quality fights too.
So, you know, I'm a UFC homer, dude. So my answer should be, obviously, the UFC. But I'm still going to DVR Bellator and watch it the next day, though.
Is that a good answer? Do you think worth the $64?
Gastel and Jacare, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you got Lyoto versus Vitor. Come on, dude. Come on.
Okay.
Congratulations to the Golden Knights for making it to the conference finals.
Thank you.
They won 7-0, 4-0, and 3-0.
Yeah.
Like, props to the goalie Fleury for you know, the shutouts and the defense, obviously. But how about that offense? And one of them was on the road.
Yeah. What I didn't get was this last game. It seemed like in the third period they were down 2-0, the Sharks. Yet we were the ones that were bombarding their goal as if we were down. I didn't understand at all what. Their team just kind of folded.
And I know that them hockey experts on TV said that when they were 2-2, the Sharks have to be feeling good about the way the series is going. Fuck no, man. They got walloped in those last two. But anyway, okay. Thank you, Marco.
Hey, I'm going to come on the defense of the Ultimate Fighter because I think this higher ceiling thing with the Contender Series is a little bit miscue. I understand that, you know, I like the format of the Contender Series better. Full disclosure, but Luke Thomas and Marisa did an Ultimate Fighter draft back on the NFL draft, and they found out that in average 4.5, you know, fighters make a name on the UFC or make a career. The lowest season of the Ultimate Fighter only got 2 recognizable names in the Ross Pearson season. Then you got 10 champions or interim champions coming out of the Ultimate Fighter, one Bellator champion on Ryan Bader. And then you got 7 or 8 number one contenders plus Nate Diaz. That is probably one of the richest guys up there. So impact-wise, the Ultimate Fighter had historically been a good format to get fighters up there. Now, the book hasn't been written on the Contender Series, but all we have to go by right now is Sean O'Malley and Alex Perez, man. So let's hold our breaks on that thing, and let's wait and see what happens. Peace out.
All right, see you, Marco. Let's go to Showtime in Tennessee. What's up, Showtime? It's your time.
Showtime. Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
What's up?
Nothing much. Hey, I just want to make a comment on Tough or the Contender Series, man. I'd rather deal with the Contender Series, man. I wouldn't want to be in the house with a bunch of dickweeds for a month or however long you got to be in the house with them. You got, you know, I just think the Contender Series, you can kind of fast forward. You know, if you're ready to be in the UFC and kind of get in a lot quicker and don't have to go through all the bullshit, you know, being in a house and all the drama. I don't like being around people like that. So that would fit my personality better. But, yeah, man, shit, I'm ready for this card this weekend, man. I think it's worth the money for the pay-per-view. There's actually some pretty good fights on this card. So I'd rather watch this than watch the Bellator card.
See, I'm still not sure if I'm going to fork over $64 for the pay-per-view. I know that's obviously a possibility. It is a solid card. I just don't know if it's pay-per-view worthy. And, you know, usually, man, I'll just shovel it out no matter what because it's part of the job and everything like that. It's not like I won't know the results on Monday. It's not like I won't see highlights, but just got to be a little bit more careful with my dough coming off the surgery, and I know I've noticed that there's been like 3 or 4 events since September when I got injured where I'm like questioning it, going and then once you do it once, you start seeing that your life doesn't end if you don't catch it, you know. And we have coverage down there, you know, from Junkie and from either of these guys if they like to watch it. But what are you doing, Goose?
I am not gonna order it. I will go somewhere to watch it probably.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's just. If you look at some of the other cards, they're just not on par.
Mm-hmm. I know, yeah. All right, Showtime. Anything else? We got to take another break here.
I mean, if I'm gambling on it, I want to watch it. I'm just getting myself if I'm gambling and don't watch it.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. That's a good point, and I plan on putting together some sort of a parlay. But I like the idea of just going to a bar, checking it out, and just putting up with the knuckleheads that are there. Thanks for the call, buddy. All right, we got to catch up with Mike Aframowitz. Let's take another break. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on SiriusXM Rush 93. Stay close. We'll be back with Combate America's Mike Aframowitz.
Charm, compassion, common sense. These guys have none of that. You listen to them, so you're no better. I am awesome, though. They are Gorgeous George and Goes.
Now that the draft is in the books, it's time to hit the field. SiriusXM NFL Radio keeps you going with live updates from rookie minicamps with reporters and rookies interviews after they put their jersey on for the first time. SiriusXM NFL Radio, Channel 88. And take NFL Radio with you wherever you go with the new and improved SiriusXM app. All right, let's talk to our first guest of the day. His name is Mike Aframowitz. He's an executive with Combate Americas. Combate Americas has a couple offerings back-to-back weeks. We'll concentrate a little bit more on the one that's coming up here on Friday at the McClellan Conference Center in Sacramento, California. Live on Univision Deportes, 12 a.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, with a main event of Brenda Little Hands of Stone Enriquez versus Lisbeth Bunny Silva Cuevas. What's up, Mike Aframowitz? How you doing, man?
How are you? You were actually good. The first to break that news. I'm not sure if you knew, but Kira Batara is injured, and she was supposed to face Elizabeth in the main event. So Brenda has stepped up on a week's notice, or less than that, to fight Elizabeth. So MMA Junkie Radio is breaking that news.
Thank you, sir. In fact, this happened recently, right? I think just within the last maybe 72 hours. Is Kira going to be out extended, or is it a minor hiccup? Can we see her on an upcoming card soon?
No idea. I just, it doesn't sound like a serious injury. It sounds more like a strain from the doctor report I saw. But, you know, who knows? We'll have to look further into it. But it doesn't sound serious. It sounds, you know, like a strain.
You all have been making a splash, man. And that move to Univision, boy, those are some pretty solid numbers you guys are racking up.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long road. The industry in general is a roller coaster ride, but it's, you know, we set out, you know, in the beginning to take our product to, you know, a major platform like this, and it's finally come to fruition. So in a lot of ways, it's surreal. You know, we started out, you know, on cable television, but we worked our way up to broadcast. And at the same time, we have, you know, a sports cable platform like you'll see, you can see Friday show on, as well as the following Friday show on. So, yeah, it's exciting times.
I know you all, as a group, you know, all the execs, all the fighters have always felt like you have a unique product there concentrating on the Latin America market. But what have you heard from your partners at Univision? Were they shocked at that number? I'm sure they're pleased. But, you know, how receptive were they early on? And what do they think now that you guys have hit a couple out of the park?
It seems like they're pleased. I don't want to speak for them, but it seems like they're very pleased. I'm not sure if they knew what to expect. Since it's the first time, MMA has ever had live on this kind of platform, and MMA in general is, you know, it's still new to, you know, both the U.S., you know, Hispanic, Spanish-speaking market, as well as Latin America. I feel, you know, like one of our staff and I were talking, it's like, you know, we feel like MMA in the other territories as well as here amongst U.S. Hispanics is where MMA was around 2004, 2005, right before it exploded. So I think that, you know, to answer your question, I'm not sure anyone knew what really to expect. You know, we were hopeful, but at the same time, you know, they say in the TV business, ratings, you know, disappoint. But, you know, thankfully they didn't disappoint this time.
Mm-hmm. Mike Aframowitz from Combate America is joining us here on the hotline. They have a fight card coming up. Speaking of Combate America's, Friday, May 11th, you catch the fights on Univision Deportes Network. 12 a.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. Now, Mike, just to be completely 100% sure here. The 12 a.m. Eastern, as in Friday, May 11th, is that Thursday night in Sacramento? I just want to make sure that on that technicality. Okay, so Friday it is. Night. It's Friday night. Okay, just making sure there. Yeah. Because
no, it's live
it may throw people. Gotcha. Okay. Now, there are free fights on the prelim bouts on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Combate America's Official. That starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Now, in the co-main event, you have Horacio the Punisher Gutierrez versus Chris Avila. I remember Avila from the Diaz camp. That's right. Okay. And then you also have Anthony the Shark Avila versus Jose Luis Verdugo, and that's the featured bout. All right, Goes, what do you have for Mike Abramowitz?
Mike, in the grand scheme of things, when you guys lay out your plans of what it is exactly you want to do, what stage would you say you guys are at in that big scheme of your plan?
Well, it's funny because the plans have actually changed. Good question, Goes, because originally when we started this, it was focused 100% on U.S. Hispanic. But since the opportunity came about last year to expand to Mexico with broadcast television, that plan has changed dramatically. The show succeeded right off the bat or in the early stages when we launched on Azteca. You know, we averaged 3.5 million viewers last year for the weekly show. And these were taped shows. They weren't, live. And so the plan quickly changed. And, there's Latin America and now Spain have become, a big focus of our business. So it's hard to say. I'd say it's still, early because of how the plan has evolved over the course of the last, 16 months. But I would say it's in the early stages, given the new, the new timeline, new big picture plan that we've put together.
I'm sure early on, Mike, and this goes for just about any new organization, there were probably people who weren't really jiving too well with the plan or, hey, let's just see how this works out, and maybe didn't take the chance that other people did take the chance. Are you guys at the point now where maybe some of those people early on that were doubters are starting to come around?
Yes. In fact, like I was saying at the beginning, when we first started speaking was, when we pitched this, it was, it was brand new and no one really was, it was hard for, the media companies really to latch on or to, sink their teeth into it because, it's tough when you're in a position to take that kind of risk. So it hadn't been tested on these platforms like Univision, Telemundo. And so because of that, it was tough to break new ground. Which is often the case when you're, it's your first to market product. So you have to really, your pipeline has to be really big in order to find someone willing to take that risk. But we did it and, it's paying dividends now and we've been able to, expand our footprint thanks to Azteca in Mexico and, Latin America thanks to ESPN. And, the ratings in Azteca proved, I think here in the U.S. to U.S. Hispanic platforms that there is a market for this and the audience is ready for it and wants to consume it.
Dan Tom, our fight analyst, he's got one for you. What you got for Mike Abramowitz, Dan?
This event's going down in the McClellan Conference Center coming up and. I like these kind of, when you get the, for example, this one's Mexico versus USA. But let me ask you this, in the McClellan Conference Center, are you guys doing any type of, maybe not so much seating, having one side on the other, but like any kind of, flags or any kind of to play to that nationalistic theme? And the reason why I ask is because sometimes you can be surprised. For example, we're here in Vegas, and for a football game, we had a traveling Hawaiian team. Come up to play a local Vegas team, but the Hawaiians actually had more people in the stand. Granted, Hawaiians are very big culturally. They like football. There's a lot here. I imagine obviously a lot of Mexicans in California. What are you guys expecting? And is there any kind of special, special ideas for the conference center there for the show?
That's a good question. Flags are a big part of what we do. Representing your country is nationalistic pride is a very big part of what we do. You will definitely see the fighters outfitted and flagging the tire, as well as, you know, for bringing, you know, carrying their flags in. What we can expect to see from the audience, it's tough to say. Sacramento's new for us. It's about 20% Hispanic. But as far as the fans go, you know, you can see, you know, like in our LA events, you can see, you know, Mexican-American or Guatemalan-American fans come out with their home country flag, you know, rather than, say, the U.S. flag on any given day. So I think, you know, what you see is, you know, a fan base that really loves both its countries, that being the U.S. as well as, you know, their country of heritage. So it's like they say, you can love your mother and your father. So, you know, Mexican-Americans, they may bring a Mexican flag, they may bring the U.S. flag, they may bring both. But, you know, fighters who are representing their countries will be, you know, outfitted with their flags. You can bet on that.
Mike, you also worked for Strikeforce for many years. What do Combate and Strikeforce have in common, you know, as you guys are growing there, and you've obviously felt the growing pains of both organizations, and now that Combate is having some success, compare, I guess, some of those successes as well?
Good question. I mean, they were very different. I actually, you know, co-founded Strikeforce with, you know, my former boss. We started the company, you know, we launched, you know, and with a couple other people as well, the end of 2005 with our first event, you know, in 2006. Very different feel to it, you know, different trajectories too. I think Strikeforce was in a good, you know, the right place at the right time as far as being able to acquire that Showtime deal, you know, which took us to, you know, the next level and eventually helped us, you know, position ourselves as number two in the world. You know, right after we signed Strikeforce, we signed Fedor. So those back-to-back moves really, you know, really, really cemented our position as number two. With Combate, it's very, you know, it's got, you know, Hispanic flavor is very different. Strikeforce had more of, a pride feel to it. Especially, you know, we took, you know, fighters, fight talent from Pride in Japan and brought them over to Strikeforce. So that's just my feeling, that it had more of a pride feel to it than, you know, than anything else. And being based in the Bay Area, you know, big Asian influence. With Combate, it's very different. The platform is obviously very different. The fighters are newer, younger, you know, up and coming. When names become available that, you know, are, say, relevant and, you know, to our product and, you know, are meaningful maybe to our television platform, then we'll acquire them. But the fighters are newer, younger, and, you know, a lot of them go for broke when they fight. You know, they just, you know, it's like when you're younger, you take more chances. And that's the fighting style is very different from, you know, other MMA organizations in general, including, you know, Strikeforce. So I'm not sure if that helps answer it, but, you know, they're very different. I see them, you know, Combate, what Combate is doing also is we're bringing in newer, younger fans. I think that are not necessarily, they're not MMA savvy. They're not, you know, avid fight fans, you know, that are already, very educated in the sport. They're new and they're learning. And that's where, you know, we're learning from research that we're doing and that our television partner's doing. So I think, you know, they're very, very different, to sum it up.
Mike Aframowitz, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. We are talking about Combate Americas. And Combate Americas does have a fight card happening on Friday. This Friday, May 11th. Mexico versus the UFC. The USA is the theme. McClellan Conference Center in Sacramento, California. And I'm looking here at the card, and there's at least four or five cards, fights on that fight card that keep with that theme. They have imported a lot of fighters from Mexico, including Lisbeth Bunny Silva Cuevas, who will be in the main event against Brenda Little Hands of Stone Enriquez. You can catch the fights on Univision Deportes Network at 12 a.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. And don't forget, the prelims are on facebook.com/Combate Americas Official, and that's 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. The following week, Combate Americas will be in Tijuana. So back-to-back weekends. Huge run for you guys here, Mike. And again, we're very happy with the success. Thank you very much for joining us here to talk a little bit about Combate, not just the promotion itself, but the fight card that's coming up. We will be tuning in, and hopefully we can do this again soon, my man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on, as always.
All right, Mike. Take care. We'll see you soon.
You too.
All right. All right, folks. As you can hear the music, we are up against the clock. We are going to take a quick break here at the top of the hour, and then we'll come back with recent Bellator signee Gerald Harris, former UFC veteran, who not only came in to late notice to step in to fight Rafael Lovato Jr., it looks like he wants to do another run. So it's an official comeback. He's signed a contract, so we'll talk more about that when we come back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Sirius XM Rush 93. Stay close. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva Las Vegas. If you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, I've got news for you. Dollar Shave Club has a lot of stuff to help you out.
You guys, Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. It's not just about razors, you guys. Dollar Shave Club, yes, that Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that'll leave your little tushy feeling tingly and clean.
I'm a big fan of their Amber Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. Never smelled anything like it. Good luck finding a product that great at the store.
All of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with the top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference, plus shipping is free with your membership.
And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, their amazing butt wipes, their world famous shave butter, and their best razor, the 6-Blade Executive. Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/junkie. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie. Do it, you filthy animals. Here we go. It's the second hour of the MMA Junkie Radio Show. I thought that was an appropriate song because our next guest is black, and I'm celebrating the fact that he's on. I love the guy. His name's Gerald Harris, Bellator middleweight. What's up, Gerald? How you doing?
What's up, man? I was listening to that song, too. I was kind of groovy.
You better hope Gerald doesn't start a podcast. We're going to be coming on to La Cucaracha if you ever guess that his.
Oh, it's going to be a super racist song.
So, Gerald, that wasn't just a fill-in. Just, you know, hey, I miss it. I'll step in, see what happens. You're committing. You actually signed a contract. You're here for a couple years or a couple fights. Give us the details.
Yeah, man, you know, my career, you guys follow me, seriously, my entire career from my beginning bum fight days to the UFC to, you know, ever since the UFC, it's kind of been up and down. You know, the World Series played pretty well, but it kind of fell apart. And my career is just, I don't know, I got bored. You know, when I ended up back on local shows selling tickets, and that's nothing against the local promoters because they treated me great. I just felt at the age of 38, I mean, that's kind of time to call it quits, you know? So I was waiting for a phone call. I talked to Professional Fighting League, and we couldn't come to an agreement. I turned them down, and then, man, Bellator just came out of nowhere, dude. I never saw this coming.
Okay, so let me ask you something about Professional Fighters League since you brought it up. What was it that you couldn't come to an agreement on? Because that prize they have at the end of the year is of $1 million. That obviously couldn't have been the turnoff, right? Was it just the per fight pay or something, or what?
Man, I think that what Professional Fight League is doing is awesome for the sport. I think the more MMA, the better. They have a great thing going, but just this is how I think. I think realistically, only 7 guys are going to win that money, and there's some great money along the way. But I'm thinking logically, this tournament is from June to December. If I break my hand in June, I'm going to miss the entire season until next June. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to negotiate some finances where I would be able to cover myself, you know. And I don't know. I didn't have a good feel. It wasn't for me at the time. And I'm also
gotcha.
Going up to 185, and 185 was full. They wanted me at 170, and I think I have one more fight at 170, and I can't do it. My body is just hurt. I had a hell of a time making 188, you know? Mm-hmm.
That fight against Rafael Lovato Jr., I mean, I don't even know if we can spend too much time on there. You've been very respectful. It didn't go your way. But the one thing I noticed was it looked like it crushed you. What was it about it that crushed you? Because I looked at it as you were playing with house money. I mean, the expectations were low. He's an undefeated fighter. We all know that you don't suck, Gerald. We know that that probably wasn't going to be the best you that night anyway. But for some reason, it crushed me as a Gerald Harris fan to see you so dejected. What was that about? Can you maybe expand on those feelings of why you were so demoralized, I guess?
Well, I've got a new mentality towards fighting now, especially with Bellator. Bellator is my home, man. I've never saw myself fighting for him because I had always had my eyes set on the UFC. But when I went, I just told him, I said, look, man, I ain't worried about no title shots. I'm just trying to put people to sleep and put people butts in the seats. And I was dead serious. I just want to fight. I want to be an entertaining fighter. I want to end my career on a high note. I'm not chasing titles. I'm literally chasing fans. Like, I want people to come watch me fight. So when I went out there, the only way that fight was going to go his way was him to catch me early and catch me dry. Which anybody in jiu-jitsu knows that in an MMA fight, the sweater you get, the harder you are to hold on to. And he, man, it worked out perfect, you know. I knocked him down, and he pulled me down. I mean, I was devastated because I've never been submitted before. You know, yes, in practice, but not even in grappling tournaments. I mean, I just got finished, and it just felt almost unreal, you know. It just broke my heart, man. You know, I didn't dwell on it too much, but I was sitting there going, did I just get finished? Like, damn, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if you had a lot of fighters that talk about losing. It really hurts your spirit, man. It hurts, you know. Mm-hmm.
Gerald Harris, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. He is a welterweight/middleweight who will be competing at Bellator MMA for the next couple of years. Well, give us the details on the contract. Is it like 4 fights, 2 years, something like that, or what can you discuss?
It's 4 fights, and I'm already working on my second fight. So, I mean, I'm going to turn 4 into 10. You know, I'm going to keep going until I feel like my body is slowing down, which it isn't. I've had some injuries. You guys know I tore my Achilles tendon last year. But you know what's crazy, man? Bellator put on a comedy show that Thursday night. I couldn't do it. Unfortunately, I was cutting 1,000 pounds, but I think they'll. I think this is where I need to be. They'll support my comedy career. I'm actually waiting on an offer from Comedy Central. I think Bellator's gonna let me be, you know, who I want to be. So I mean, I couldn't imagine doing a comedy show, you know, for Bellator, and it was a legit show at the Laugh House in Chicago.
Who else on the Bellator roster is into comedy, other than yourself?
I think Frank Mir went up there. Chael Sonnen went up there. Yo,
okay, I did hear about that.
John McCarthy went up there, but this is what I do for real, man. People know when I get on the stage, and Joe Rogan has mentioned me a few times. He's seen me perform. I sent him a clip. That's what I do. That is my passion. I love it. And for me to be able to go to an organization that supports everything that I do, other than making all these damn kids, I'm really happy.
Right now, with the success of your comedy career, would the headline be more appropriate, Comedian Returns Back to Fighting, or do you still prefer MMA Fighter is Enjoying Success in Comedy?
I'm definitely going to go the fighter route because people know me more for fighting than they do for comedy, but they're surprised at my comedy act. So I think it's more surprising. I know this sounds kind of backwards. I think it sounds better for a fighter to do comedy than a comedian to fight, because it looks like when you see Chael, you go, that's a fighter doing comedy. It looks awkward. Mm-hmm. Now, if a comedian decides to get on stage, fight, he looks like a dumbass. Like, dude, you're not a fighter, you know? So to see another side of me is pretty cool. Man, I'm telling you right now, big things are going to happen. And we're only halfway through the year.
I would have preferred Comedian Returns to Fighting. Yeah. I don't know why. I feel like I'd want to click that story and go, really? Who? And then when I see it, it's up to me to find out what's this guy been up to, and you know, how's this going to work, or where can I catch more of him? I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, I don't know. The other way, a few of them have done it already. But I thought, like, because you fought a few of the fights after World Series on the smaller shows, it felt like Gerald had been away for a few years. You see what I'm saying? And in that time, there's a lot of new fans that may see it as a comedian returning to fighting. But what do I know? I don't know.
Hey, I'll take either way, whatever the fans want. But I'm just known for fighting. So, honestly, if whatever way works best for me. But, you know, I kind of got back on the map with that slam. I don't know if you guys remember, but when I disappeared for a little while, I was going through a 3-year divorce, man. Custody battle, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of laid low. And then I got a new wife, and I'm happy, and I slammed old boy to sleep. And, man, ever since then, the buzz has been going. People still talk about that and the David Branch slam to this day.
Hell yeah. I remember seeing you on ESPN here, top 10 for many days.
Number 2. I've been number 2 three times. I remember that. I've been on ESPN 3 times, and I was number 2 3 times. So like a hockey goal or a soccer kick.
Yeah, I was going to say, what beat you? Do you remember?
It was a hockey goal. I'm like, dude, that happens every weekend. Like, it was crazy. So I was
all right.
A little bit.
Goes, what do you have for Gerald Harris?
Gerald, I'm going to try and ask my question without coming off as a dick. And that's going to be a little difficult. The last time you were on the show, it was kind of like your retirement interview with us. And we must have given you a million scenarios as to, well, would you come back if, and you shot us down like prom night over and over. So my question is, what exactly changed for you to want to do this again? And when did that change start happening?
My thing is, when I talk to you guys, I really felt like my career wasn't going anywhere and I wasn't getting what I wanted out of the sport. Everybody wants me in their organization, but they don't want to pay me. You know, even the small shows, they go, hey, we need you to fight for us for this much. I'm like, no, I'm going to be the main event. You want me to do pictures, flyers, posters, interviews, but you want to pay me this little chunk of money and sell tickets? Come on, man. So I just don't believe any main or co-main event on a local show should be physically selling tickets. When Bellator called me, we negotiated for probably 30 seconds, and I got everything I wanted, literally. They were so cool. Rich is a super good guy. My requests were not high demands. I was just saying, this is what I'm worth, man. If I'm going to get in there, this is what I want. And they were like, boom, got it. And I was like, hell yeah. So what brought me back was, for one, the way they treated me and the money that they offered me. They paid me well for my time. I felt appreciated for the first time in a long time. And literally, that's what brought me back. And it's easier. A lot of guys don't understand. it's easier to train when you feel good about where you're fighting. It's so much easier to get motivated to get up in the morning and run and spar and do all the crazy things that we do. So it was definitely Bellator that got me out of retirement, which was one of the options. I don't even know if we talked about that, but that it came out of nowhere, man. The money was right. You know, it was a crazy – it was a win-win situation. I think Doe said it best. It was a win-win situation.
If I know that you said that right now it's just kind of about stacking paper and just becoming a big name again, but the road to the title in Bellator is not as long as it can be in other organizations. So the same way you feel reinvigorated for your career right now, should you maybe rack up a win or two here in Bellator, do you think those same aspirations will come back and maybe that smell of a title will also reinvigorate that part of your career?
No, I want to rack up a couple wins, and I'm going right back after Lovato. I got to get him. I mean, he got me on short notice. I think it'll be a great story. If he's a champ, so be it. If he's not, I'm still going to get him. I got to get my one back, you know what I mean? But if I can make the same amount of – if I can generate the same amount of attention and fan base without even fighting for a title, I'm cool. If they decide to give me a title shot, I think guys get distracted by the title shot. Because let's say that I was on a 3-fight win streak, and my next fight was against so-and-so. It's like the winner gets a title shot. I don't want to be in that position. I just want to whoop ass, man. That's all I want to do. Like, literally, all I want to do is go out there and put on the show. And this next guy, I can't say who, we're negotiating with an opponent right now. He definitely doesn't have a big name, but he has a damn good resume. So it'll be a good win for me. This all falls through. I'll be fighting pretty soon.
How soon?
Hopefully, I'm trying to get on that July card, Thackerville. That was okay. The one I actually publicly put out. Hey, it's fighting in Oklahoma. I got a huge fan base here in the Midwest. And I guess they heard me. They contacted me. But nothing's set in stone yet. But they're trying to get me on that card.
Gotcha. All right. Gerald Harris, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. Gerald, we also have our fight analyst, Dan Tom. He's got a couple for you. Dan, what do you have for Gerald?
Hey, what's up, Gerald? I was just curious, you know, you spoke about the mentality of it being easier to kind of go to work every day, so to speak, to train, you know, when you're happier. But where are you doing your training these days? Is it still the same spots, or what do you got going on?
I've always had the same training camp. I got the same coaches. I got a lot of new guys in the gym, a lot of young guys. You know, I'm 38 now. Started fighting when I was 26. So, I mean, these guys were like 10 years old when I started fighting. And these little youngsters, man, they bring it. Every time they come in, they got a lot of energy. You learn from them, and I teach them a little bit. But I run my own camp. I'm like an old-school boxer. I don't go to the big gyms. And well, nothing against them. I beat a lot of those guys, though. You know, I like the attention. I have my own boxing coach, jiu-jitsu coach. I have a kickboxing coach, Muay Thai coach, strength and conditioning. You name it, it's all about me. And the guys around me are all working together. So I do my own thing. And that's it. So I love it. But I am going to go visit Tyron Woodley. I reached out to him. He said I was more than welcome. He's down in St. Louis, and I would love to go see Greg Jones in Florida. So I do travel and train. King Mo comes in town every once in a while and works out with us. So, yeah, man, I kind of do my own thing. I don't even have a team. That sounds crazy. I don't have a team.
Do you still train at the Ghost Dog, affiliated with the Ghost Dog Gym?
Yeah, Ghost Dog is my boxing coach. That's
okay.
The pretty much the organization that he runs. That gym no longer exists, but, I mean, we live by those words, Ghost Dog Boxing. So I think people are surprised when they learn about my boxing skills. So I don't know.
That's just one quick follow-up on that. Is your coach, or even you, I guess, for that matter, is it come from that Forrest Whitaker movie, Ghost Dog?
No, it wasn't. Man, it's a long story, but it's a nickname of one of our fighters, Ghost Dog Boxing, man. That's we call it GDB for life, but GDB stands for a lot of stuff, like get that bread. It stands for a lot of stuff. So GDB can stand for anything, but of all, it stands for Ghost Dog Boxing.
Hey, speaking of comebacks and speaking of acronyms, what about GTL? You've been watching the new Jersey Shore?
You know what? I watched like one episode, and I was good. I did see Ronnie being a dumbass and getting some domestic violence charges off screen. But, I loved Jersey Shore back in the day, but it's just kind of hard to bring it back. That'd be like doing Coming to America Part 2, man. You just something. You just can't. You got to let it go, man.
But it's a ratings hit.
I actually thought it was pretty good. Oh, yeah. I would say give it one more shot because it was actually pretty funny.
It's a ratings hit, bro.
It is because they have a lot of hardcore fans. They're original crew. I mean, you definitely can. But for me, I'm cool. I saw one episode and I was good. And I didn't follow them enough afterwards to really be into it. But it's a great concept, but it just didn't work for me. So, I mean, imagine if they brought all the dudes back from the Ultimate Fighter Season 1. I mean, I would watch it, you know, because I'm that hardcore of a fan. They all be old as hell, but.
Looks like someone's crush on Snooki's over, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, Gerald, one last thing here. We had an article about fighters versus MMA media. I know Gastelum was not pleased with something on Junkie, and I think Nico Montano and Errol Hawani had a little beef. And then I saw Angela Hill also chiming in, and you chiming in on her thread. How bad is it for you with MMA media throughout your career? Since you've had a long career, you have a pretty good sense of humor, but I was just wondering, were those like personal feelings? Like, have you butted heads a lot with the media over the years, or were you just kind of chiming in?
I'll be super honest, man. And I can understand from a media standpoint, you guys have to get ratings. And you guys have always been fair. That's why I love talking to you. I turn down a lot of interviews because they only contact me after something big comes along. Or I feel they're kind of groupie-ish. If you talk to these guys before they make it big, or when they're in legacy, when they're 10-0 and they're about to make it, then they have a fan base. But if you talk to them after their first UFC fight, they got 17 interviews that week, you know? So after my Bellator fight, I did about 3 interviews. That was it. But you guys have always been super fair. My problem, the only beef I had with Errol Hawani is I just told him, are you the UFC hour or the MMA hour? Like, he's like, you know, you're supposed to be one of the top journalists, but all you do is talk about the UFC. You guys are super good at spreading the love across from every organization, you know? That's my only beef is, man, once they learn to share the wealth and share the attention, it's going to go to another level. They just have to be careful what they print. And think about this, man. When I started fighting 12 years ago, social media wasn't a big thing. It's bigger now. You got Twitter. You got all kind of stuff that people can say and do. So you got to be careful who you quote and what you say.
You said the other day, you said that when you lost, it hurt your spirit, like the loss hurt. Do you think mostly that's what fighters, I guess, that's their problems with fans, is that the fans sometimes just get them at that most vulnerable moment, and that if they could back off maybe for 48 hours, let them process the result, then maybe, you know, it'd be a little easier when it comes to social media.
Social media is a fucking option. Keep your ass off the internet. If you feel like your feelings are going to get hurt, get your ass off Twitter, get off Facebook, don't at your name. Like, don't. It's volunteer. Social media bullying is for real, but at the same time, get your ass off of there. You have the right to be on there, but as a fighter, you know you're putting yourself out there. Now, here's the thing. I do talk about money because realistically, when I come home, I got bills to pay, my family to feed. My wife's pregnant now. You know what I'm saying? We got a business that we're running. So when I fought for Bellator, I got a flat pay rate, so I was cool stepping in the cage and just going out there and, you know, not worrying about a win or loss bonus, and I felt really good. Now, the reality of the situation is when you lose, I'm the only one in that cage that lost, you know, not my coaches, not my family. I know they feel my pain, but at the same time, I got to go backstage, and I'm trying not to cry. And, you know, Rampage came and talked to me, man. He really lifted my spirits. He gave me a really good speech about, he's like, look where you at, dude. You on a Fedor card. Bellator took care of you. You got a 4-fight contract. He said, man, get your ass up and go out there and watch them fight. And literally, I got my ass up and went out there and watched the fight, you know. You got to get over it quickly because we don't have tomorrow like basketball. I don't get the, you know, LeBron's last shot yesterday, and then 2 days later you can beat him. We don't have that luxury, that option. I got to wait 3 or 4 months to redeem myself. Years, not years, but at least 3 or 4 fights before I see Lovato again. So, man, it's a long road. But I'll tell you one thing. You can't take nothing personal in this sport, man. If you do, stay off social media because they don't give a damn.
They sure don't, man. It's, say, it's a fucking battlefield out there.
That's what they say online. Fuck your feelings.
All right, bud. Hey, man. Well, so I had it wrong. For some reason, I thought you signed a one-fight deal, went out there, got a taste of competing again, and then signed another contract. But it sounds like your contract was already signed even before you went in there. So very cool. I just had that minor detail wrong. And but yeah, either way, we're happy for you that you're sticking around for a few years.
I think that my freedom in Bellator, I don't feel like I can be cut. And I'm not saying that in an arrogant way. I'm saying that in a – I don't think they cut fighters. Like, it's not like you go on a two-fight loss, you know, streak and they let you go. Like, I never hear about Bellator guys going, this is a must-win fight. You know, you just fight, you know. If you lose two or three in a row and you put on a damn good show, it looks like they'll just keep you around. You won't make the same amount of money.
Yeah.
But you're definitely going to you have a job. I feel like I have a career now instead of a job. That's a big difference. Mm-hmm.
You pumped up about Mo. He headlines this weekend against Bader. I know he's a boy of yours. I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because I know which way you're leaning and all that. But either way, man, this should be a great fight, you know, because Bader's definitely earned a lot of people's respect over the years.
Man, I hate that fight. Mo's my boy. Mo's like my brother. And Bader's like my friend. You guys, I don't know if you remember, but I trained with Bader after the Ultimate Fighter. Me, CB, we're a wrestling family. You know, we're all good. But Mo is my boy. You know what I mean? I hate watching those fights. Like when Chael fought Rampage, when Mo fought Rampage, when, Rashad fought Rampage. Now I got Stipe fighting Cormier. You guys don't understand. I've been knowing those guys for almost 20 years.
Stipe and Cormier. Stipe and Cormier. What are you going to do there?
I'm not going. Cormier started MMA with us. Like, he started 1-0, went to Cali.
Team Thirsty.
Boom, blew up. Yeah, we was bum fighting for one fight, and he blew up. So I started.
And what's fighting. The Cleveland State mascot? What's the mascot at that university?
The Vikings.
So he's got a Viking teammate and a Team Thirsty teammate. Wow, you're right, man. You're caught in the middle of some pickles there.
I'm caught in the middle, man. Cormier started his career with us at Ghost Dog and Team Thirsty, and then I started my career with Stipe with a small team called Team Instigator. Just disappeared over the years, but, man, I'm torn. And now I'm the same way with this Bader and Mo fight. I'm just like, God. I mean, definitely Mo's my boy. I want Mo to win, but I still got love for Bader. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the best thing to do, man, is just cheer that it's a great fight. May the best man win. May the loser's stock not drop much, and hopefully if there's any bonuses, depending on the organizations or whatever, that they get to share that or just get a lot of love on social media and obviously that they're in positions for great fights even after that. You know what I mean?
He's going to be team
on the
fence,
right? Yeah, I always
hope
for a good fight and nobody gets knocked out. That's what or injured. But you know what? I'm a wrestler, man, and we're old school, and shit happens. And that's the beauty of the sport. You know, it's just we have knees and punches and submissions now. But in wrestling, dude, it was like, whatever. You know, let's go bang and we cool after. You know, so it's the same thing with MMA. We get used to fighting our friends or people we know.
Yeah. All right, my man. Go ahead, Gus.
I just have one silly question.
Okay,
to ask.
Go ahead.
In your comedy career, has anybody ever gotten out of line while you were on stage, throw something at you, or tell you to shut up, get the fuck out, that sort of thing?
I started my career as a class clown, and I went to an amateur night, and I had no jokes, and my whole career was based on what we call ragging on people, bagging on them, whatever you want to call it. And I would just destroy people. And then I developed into a comedian where I would tell stories and talk about my life. But no, I'm so quick with handling hecklers. I've never had a heckler even last a minute with me. I murder them. And they definitely won't throw anything. I mean, I ain't having that. I'm not a violent person, but I will somebody ass if I have to. But no, I don't let it get that far. And with 20 years of comedy, man, I've learned to control the crowd. And you got to judge people's body language. I've talked about people and they look uncomfortable, so I move on. And a lot of comedians don't know how to do that. A good friend of mine, not a good friend, but a good comic that I know, we became friends, Steve Brown, had a guy run up on a stage with a mic stand swinging it at him, man, and was really trying to injure him. The guy had a mental disorder, kind of flipped out. And he wasn't even talking about the dude. Dude just jumped up on the stage swinging at him. So I hope that never happens, because I'm definitely going to get a viral slam on somebody on a damn comedy stage.
Well, I know you're friends with Adam Hunter, and have you seen, I think he was doing a wedding, and there's a video of that where somebody got a little pissed and ran up on him. But, you know, Adam's got a rest
menu
background.
At him one time. They hit him right in the head.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that punched him, man. It got punched him. Somebody hired, they hired him to crash the wedding, and he was destroying it, and this guy got pissed off and punched him in the head, man, but nah. That ain't happening to me, man. I wish somebody would run up on me. No, I don't wish somebody would run up on me.
All right, my man. Well, listen, let's keep in touch. Let us know if anything pops on Comedy Central. We'd love to preview that. And, of course, maybe that'll be around the time your next fight's there or whatever. But I want to see more of the comedy. Sounds like you really got some talents, and more people need to see it.
They said that we'll know by June. I submitted my 45-minute tape. And it was the best. I'm just waiting for them to respond. And, man, I would love to have you guys be a part of that. I think I'm going to film it in California. I shoot 45 minutes, but they only keep 30. But, I mean, what more of a better story is, like you said, a comedian that's fighting, right? Returning to fighting.
Wow. All right,
bud.
I'm rolling with that. Thanks for the time, as always, Gerald. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, see ya. All right, folks, that's Gerald Harris fighting for Bellator now. He's been all over the world, and now it looks like he's going to finish things out with Bellator MMA. You can give him a follow on Twitter. Let him know you heard him on the @MMA Junkie Radio Show. And his Twitter handle is @GHurricane. Let's take this break. When we come back, we'll do a run of calls, 866-522-2846. It's MMA Junkie Radio on SiriusXM, Rush 93.
Kicked off the set of The Fast and the Furious for being too loud and too good-looking. Once again, here's Gorgeous George and Goes.
This is what Ronald Miller's dancing to? In the...
this is one of those 1990 songs, you know, those girl bands, cover girls. Or, I don't know.
Is it the cover girls?
I don't know. Beginning I sent sound. A bunch of songs into Danny, and I was just reading them off one by one. But I heard this one on Channel 54 on SiriusXM, which is, it's called Studio 54. I'm sure you heard this, right? You're probably like 8th grade?
It sounds like something that I remember from a movie.
Remember when you went through your phase, like in 7th, 8th grade, when you were dressing really, really nice? Like, every day goes with go, like, I mean, really, really top-notch dress. And I was like, bro, it's fucking 7th grade. It's like...
7th grade, it's 100 degrees.
Yeah, I'm like... Don't, you know, loosen up the collar a little or whatever. And then, of course, he went to a phase where he was real casual. Like, where's that 7th grader? Let's dress him up again. Now he's dressing. But it's the fun stuff. I've gone through it, too. I'm sure people shake their heads at my attire. Anyway, let's skip a read for now. I want to jump on some calls. I've been waiting for a while. I'll start off with Hal in Chicago. What's up, Hal? How you doing?
Hi, guys. Hi. First, I want to start off. With a stun gun, a stun gun Monday. I'd like to stun gun Goes for failing to stun gun himself last week.
I did stun gun myself, didn't I?
I don't think you did. I don't know.
Oh. Galley listens to every freaking second of the show, so you know Galley.
If Galley says a word, I'm going to stun gun him. Because normally, if I hear anything from Galley, it leads to a stun gun.
But if Galley did say, you missed it, then
I would believe it.
Yeah,
I would believe
he
it.
He is accurate when it comes to that. And remind me, because I have a stun gun too, but let's let Hal finish up his call. What else you got, Hal?
Okay, I want to say Cobra Kai cosign. That was outstanding. First time I ever binge-watched any season. They got me. I watched it all in less than 24 hours. That was outstanding. And I want to know if you guys had an arch nemesis from your childhood or even adulthood, like, you know, in the industry, or if you guys had an arch nemesis and why, if you got time to talk about that later.
Like a LaRusso-Johnny Lawrence relationship?
Yeah, exactly.
In the industry of MMA or just in our lives in general?
In your lives in general.
Okay. Todd Worrell.
How the hell is he your rival?
Well, he said Nemesis, right? I could not. Yeah. They gave him, he had a great year, and they gave him the most ridiculous contract. And I swear to God, George, he might as well,
to Jack Clark.
When he signed the contract, he might as well twirled his mustache and just went, yeah, and then just blown off because he didn't do jack shit after that.
Well, I think you were more pissed at the home run he gave up to Jack Clark in the divisional series years ago.
Oh, so mad.
But think about, like, for I remember years, I hated they got a guy named, I think, Schmidt from San Francisco and paid him a lot of money. I thought he messed up your scale way more. Darren Dreyfuss, he got like $55 million for 5 years, and he could never be healthy. So I think your beef was more with that one incident.
I just remember like his attitude after that was just like, it was kind of like, hey, that's the ball game. Or like he would say that when you'd screw up, and I'd just be like, dude, no, you got paid a lot of money, and you obviously are not training in the off season. You're not doing shit. You don't care. I just hated him so much.
You got a rival, Dan, Tom?
Does it? Yeah, I was thinking like personal ones, but the way Goz mentioned it, are we talking about maybe athletes
Let's go
or something?
With the personal, yeah.
A personal one. Yours was personal? That sounded like an athlete, right?
So I was an athlete, but
he just flipped it.
Hal wanted a personal one.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I guess like.
Like if you're LaRusso, did you have a John Lawrence?
No. Not really. I mean, I don't know. I the only bully thing I encountered, I had someone stole my sunglasses, and then like I just tried to fight the kid all the time, and then I never got a chance to. And it ended up being like ridiculous where I was just wasting my afternoons looking for kids to get to fight, and it never happened. Had a best friend growing up who just like kind of a splitting of ways thing, but like I mean it was there was kind of like a little bit of friendly competition and competitiveness through the friendship. We were into the same thing, so by nature we would be, you know, up for the same roles or saying the same jokes and same girls and
yeah, that's more my thing too, is just my buddies have been my competition as far as like command of the room, laughter, or chasing skirts over the years or whatever, but nothing to the point where like Lawrence and Macho like fought, you know, like I mentioned him before. He wrote me a nice message not too long ago, but I did have there was just one guy that I worked with who didn't help me out as a wingman. But it never led to a fight. It
I just had
led
an ex-boss that I could consider my rival.
It led to a friendship that just kind of, you know, dissolved or whatever.
But how about if you guys got a time later, maybe on Facebook? I know you guys got one. Who's your number one? Who's your number one Johnny on Facebook? Your friend of me on Facebook. I'd like to hear that.
That's a good question. All right, we'll see if we can. We'll see if we can let that one marinate and grab one. But I want to stick with the stun gun theme. I have one for Mike Lowry. A listener of the show. I'm not sure he still listens, honestly, but I know he participates in some of the chats that we're in or whatever, and some junkies keep tabs. He said Barry Bonds was a better athlete to baseball than Jordan was to basketball. I can't even get it out without laughing. Than Jordan was to basketball.
No
Look,
way.
Barry Bonds was an awesome baseball player. Even if you put those allegations to the side, he still produced great numbers. Like, I think it was 24 years, most home runs ever. It's hard to put those to the side, though, there's so many people that point fingers and say, hey, look, even though we didn't go officially down with the ship, there's been enough others that were involved that have said, yeah, we all enhanced ourselves here, but he was able to escape a lot. Now, that may jeopardize him ever getting into the Hall of Fame. If I'm not mistaken, he's not in the Hall of Fame. But he could hit. He could hit for power. He had defense. He had a nice, you know, great
decent
arm.
Defense.
He had speed. He was a five-point player. He came up short on some numbers, like he didn't hit for 300, he didn't hit for 3,000 hits, and he didn't get 2,000 RBIs. But he did crush on home runs and walks, so it's not like he was wasting at-bats. He just wasn't the best teammate. But further than that, guys, how do you even watch? And that is my thought on Barry Bonds. Pause. Now I have to start a new sentence if I'm to talk about Michael Jordan. You can't even put Barry Bonds in the same sentence as Michael Jordan. You just can't. I'm not even sure you could do that with Babe Ruth. I'm not even sure you could do that with Magic Johnson or Muhammad Ali or maybe even LeBron. I don't know. Maybe Cristiano Ronaldo.
You can with Muhammad Ali.
And Leo Messi from soccer, who have been phenomenal soccer athletes. I mean, as popular as Jordan have done and have broken records and won championships and individual titles. those guys, I think you can say Jordan, Messi, Cristiano, whichever, just pick one of the two. I'll pick Cristiano because he was a Red Devil. Cristiano Ronaldo and Jordan. I mean, you can say that and no one will go, yeah, yeah. Everybody would nod their head and go, two great athletes. Nobody would ask you to separate the sentences or talk about anything else. But this is something different, man. I mean, Jordan is maybe the finest athlete ever to represent the United States. He won a college national championship. He won a U.S. gold medal twice, the Dream Team, and in 84 in L.A. When it was just amateurs. He won six world titles, I think five MVPs. He won six finals MVPs, led the league in scoring. I don't know how many years.
All defensive defense, team.
Defensive player of the year. Took a couple years off, still was able to come back. I mean, he put Chicago on the map, man. The Bulls, the shoe line. I mean, there's distance there between Bonds and
Jordan. He's not even
Jordan,
playing
dude.
Anymore.
And it's
people
nothing
are
to
like,
do
what
with
do the new
Bonds.
Jordans look like?
It's nothing to do with Bonds. I mean, if Barry Bonds is listening to this show, he's probably bobbing his head going, I feel that guy. Who's the fucking idiot that put me in the same sentence as Jordan and is about to give this guy a heart attack? Even he knows. You just don't get near Jordan like that, man. And Jordan crushed the Lakers' souls many times. So trust me, there was many times I was like, get that fool. Foul him. I loved it when the Pistons used to bully the shit out of him.
Rick Fox was too busy fouling Scottie Pippen.
Come
so, sorry.
On, man. There's no way. I just – do you see that?
No. No, but
could you even say that with a
straight
face?
It's nothing against Barry Bonds.
It's nothing against him. He's a great baseball player, one of the greatest, honestly. But I just think that Jordan's just on another level to all athletes, pretty much. I think
LeBron's pretty close.
LeBron, yeah, LeBron's not done. He's pretty close. He hit another game winner. Everybody was kind of closing the book on the Cavs, and wow, what they've done to Toronto has been nothing short of amazing, man. I thought Toronto was going. This was going to be their year. Mm-hmm. I think they can close them out altogether. But that's my stun gun. Did we get it?
Yeah.
There you go.
God.
I don't even think I revisited the thread. I just I looked. I laughed. I go, man, this is up for the dumbest thread of 2018. Could be from 2010 to 2020. I don't know if that one will be able to be beat.
I mean, Tom Brady's probably there too, but he's lost a lot of, I don't know, Joe Montana. There's a few people you can compare him to, maybe, but even then, dude.
Well, see, I would argue that Bonds' career is probably even with Brady's, maybe, but Brady represents something else too. Like when we're talking about greatness, there's a lot of other things than just
he just rarely laid an egg. You know, I could see Bonds having an 0-for-4 night or something like that and coming back. But
well, did Bonds
Jordan
win a world
rarely
title?
Rarely had. I don't know.
I don't think he did. Right? Or I think he retired before San Francisco had that little run that they had. So I'm not even so sure he won. I remember him almost throwing out Sid Bream in 1991. I could have thrown him out. Well, I shouldn't say that. Sid Bream was slow, but Bonds had quite an arm, man. And
they like Engelbert.
If anybody had a chance at him, it was someone like Bonds. But I remember that series not going his way, and then Frisco obviously against the Angels, that didn't go their way. And then I don't recall if he was in any other World Series and how that went, but I don't think he ever won a world title. If he did, maybe there was one. Remember, I kind of just separated from baseball little by little as we started doing this show. An old face returns. It's the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy. What's up? See you to the Triple B.
Fellas, Clearwater Beach Bad Boy checking in the program. How is everybody?
Good. What up?
Guys, let's blaze through this real quick because the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy, of course, has gone viral. If you've seen the tweets and the texts from the John Morgan over the past 72 hours, I had to throw the guy a little bit of a bone. We'll get into that in a second, guys. But first of all, I heard you earlier in the show talking about, we want to pay $65 for a pay-per-view. The same people that I hear complaining about paying for pay-per-views are the same jackasses that say, hey, hold on, let me pull over. I got to find a payphone and make a call. Who the hell still pays for pay-per-view? Who does that?
I do.
I don't think I've seen anybody pay for a pay-per-view unless it was a buffet and you had to do an entrance fee. Guys, it's been years since anybody's paid. But, guys, let's get on to the meat and potatoes of the call. I have a big rival on this program, although he has seemed to kind of disappear since the wedding. One, Rob Shaw. Do we remember Rob Shaw, guys, on this program?
Hell yeah.
That's your rival? Rob Shaw?
Rob Shaw from Costa Mesa, now living in Orange, now a father, black belt in Muay Thai.
I didn't even know he got married.
Good guy, yeah. Well, he did, and then got divorced, and I think he's married again with a kid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Why was he a rival?
Well, we had that thing where who was the top caller. There was a big voting session on this program. Of course, I think that there was some interference in the voting, maybe from another country. Rob Shaw won. Always been a big rival of the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy. I sort of always looked at him as a little brother. He got married. He disappeared. If you remember, he's the guy that posted the wedding pictures wearing MMA gloves, him and his wife. Not too sure what that tells you about the marriage, guys, but that's what I remember most about Rob Shaw. And you talked a little bit about Deadpool off the air, guys. Refresh my memory. Is Gina Carano in that movie?
Yeah.
She is.
Does she speak?
Not much.
A little bit here and there.
Okay.
Is this the one where she got dubbed over? Or
no,
another one?
That was where she was like one of the stars.
Oh, okay.
Not in this one. She has like a few speaking roles here and there. Yeah. It's very little.
Definitely somebody who I thought would have a bigger movie career. And guys, last but not least, if you remember this weekend, if you've seen the texts, if you've seen the tweets, the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy on the field got a chance to talk to him, mentioned your show. He would love to come on this program when I give the okay. Former Dallas Cowboy defensive lineman. I went one-on-one with him this weekend. I'm talking about Greg Hardy, guys. I got a chance to sit down and talk with him.
Yeah. So he's got a debut coming up on Dana White Contender Series, right, or something like that? Like in a couple months or next month?
I believe of June. But my question is this, and this is something you guys can help me with, and him and I spoke about this. He's got a one-year contract with the American Arena League, the same league that I'm in. He plays for the Richmond Rough Riders. I play for the team out of Georgia called the Peach State Cats. They haven't lost in 2 years. He's a big deal in this thing, and he's making some pretty good money. If he wins and signs the UFC contract, or currently, maybe they don't know, I did not think you could play other sports. What's the difference between boxing and pro wrestling? Wouldn't he have to step away from the American Arena Football League if he gets a UFC contract?
I believe so.
Wouldn't
because
they just buy out the contract more than likely?
Well, I don't know how that works. I don't know if they've ever really done that, goes, but I know he's training with American Top Team, so I know he knows what he's getting into. And by going on Dana White Contender Series, if he goes out and performs great, I doubt he's just going to go, whoo, always wanted that on my bucket list. Now I'm going back to the arena football. I think he really does want to try and be a part of the UFC, and I think he knows that if he was on the UFC, that at that point he would have to sign a contract and his football career would be put on hold. I don't want to say over because, you know, he could be done with the UFC in a year or two if things don't go his way, but at least for that time, that's the way the UFC contract is. It just doesn't allow you to go out and do other things other than, like, if you are a Ronda Rousey or just some sort of a popular figure where you're allowed to do, you know, something that's not too physical on WrestleMania and then pop back and fulfill your contract or whatever. Submission grappling, things like that. But I don't think he'd be able to go out and play football. But yes, it'd be such the early stages that just getting a win on Dana White Contender Series doesn't make you the next Brock Lesnar. Depending on how it looks within a fight or two, he's popular obviously because of his NFL career. But I don't know, man. And we'll have an answer soon. First, he's got to go out there and impress. Nick Newell's also going to be on that card, or one of them. So. Do you know why Contender Series? You know, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on it. It's good to hear back from you, Clearwater. Thanks for the call. We got to go to break. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Sirius XM, Rush 93. Stay close. We'll be right back to close up shop. But we'll have that daily debate for you as well.
I get paid to say things in this cool voice, and they get paid to be lame. Here are Gorgeous George and Goes.
All right, guys, I got to make an executive decision here. We have to do a couple minutes of OT. Otherwise, we're going to push this. So, fuck it. Let's do the daily debate brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team. Here we go. Here's the question for today. Which upcoming headliner are you most anticipating? Bader versus King Mo, Saturday. It's Bellator 199. That's the main event. Remember, it's part of the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix. It's the last quarterfinal. Or Nunes versus Pennington. That is UFC 224 in Rio de Janeiro on Saturday as well. A pay-per-view, and Amanda Nunes defends her bantamweight belt against Raquel Pennington. Dan?
I got to go with Bader versus Mo. You know, this fight was supposed to be Ryan Bader's original debut fight in Bellator organization, but now it's for a belt, and I'm excited to see it, so that's going to be my answer.
I'm with you, man. I know what you mean. I'm not going to pick at your answer because you mean it's for the process of winning the belt, because the next guy would advance. But you're right. want to see them not only fight this time, but at some point for Bader's Bellator light heavyweight belt.
Yep.
So I'm with you there. I really want to see them fight twice, and if it turns into a trilogy, whatever. But I'm there, man. I'm there. I know I'm going to get some heat, women's MMA. I'm not always there with it, but this is just a quality main event for Bellator. Between two of the top 205ers in the world. Looks like they're building a little bit of heat between the two of them as well. Yeah. How about you, guys?
I'm with you. And I know Bader's been with Bellator for a while now, but it even kind of has that UFC versus Bellator feel where back in the day you could say, all right, who are some of the good light heavyweights? These are some of the names that would come up. So I feel like there's more to that matchup than there is with the Nunes-Pennington matchup.
I think Nunes is turning into a quality champion for the UFC. She's like 8-1 or 9-1 in the UFC. She's got some great skins on her wall that she can be very proud of. Maybe someday her and Cyborg can mix it up and see who's the best one ever. And Pennington has earned her shot. She definitely deserves respect, but there just hasn't been much of a build-up between the two ladies. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just not – I don't feel like I'm there yet with it. I'll probably be tuning in one way or another come Saturday. But, man, give me Bader or Mo. And I'll tell you what, this is the way the voting came in, 1,351 voted. 55% said Bader versus Mo. 45% Nunes versus Pennington. There you have it, folks. That is the Daily Debate brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team. All right, so let's close up on time. Want to thank our guests today, Mike Aframowicz from Combate Americas, talking about Combate Americas and the fight card that they have coming up here. Back-to-back weekends in Sacramento and in Tijuana. You can catch them on Univision Deportes. Also, Gerald Harris, who has signed a 4-fight contract with Bellator. We had a great conversation with him. Tomorrow, Charles Rosa from the UFC will be our guest co-host for the day. So tune in. For Goz and Dan and Danny, I'm George. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion. I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh.